Blog Talk Radio.
Theme from Batman, the original Bat theme there. And so I'd like to welcome you all to a team of voices, Blog Talk Radio. And we are doing a show today about bats. And we thought it was only appropriate that if we were doing a show about bats, that we should have the original 1960 Batman theme song there in all of its glory. And I'd like to welcome Haddo to his Hatterday Saturdays. And it was, I don't think you got your word in there, Haddo, because it just went straight into the song.
I did. It surprised me. And I'd like to, I appreciate those lyrics to that song quite.
Yes. Yes. So. And I should say the person who I was talking to about this, about an hour ago, was the one, the only Deborah Lee, who's in charge of a team of voices. Hello, Deb. How are you?
Hey, I am good. Glad to be here. How you doing?
It was good. That was great to hear that song again. I haven't heard that for ages.
I know, right? When it said boom, pow, I was like, oh, grin. Anyway, I can hear you both smiling, and that was worth it, you know, cool.
So, no, very, very happy about that. And that I think was the album version. It went for a little bit longer. It's great to see the lyrics of that song, Hatter. And it actually does have songwriters.
It is the long version. Yeah, that was the long version.
Yep, the long version. And the songwriter of this is credited to Neil Hefti from 1966. And, of course, the lyrics of that particular song are the repetition of Batman. And that repetition goes, and I kid you not, 31 times. So Batman is repeated 31 times, and then we have the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da bit, yeah? And so there's about 16 da-da-da-da-da-da's, and we get to the 32nd Batman, and that is the lyrics. So I reckon you've done pretty well as a lyricist if you've actually, you know, managed to go and get about 75 words into a song, and you've used only two words, Batman and da. Yep.
Yeah,
and that
genius.
Is what they managed to do. Neil Hefti, congratulations for actually going and managing to do that. Because,
thank you, Neil.
Because back in 1966, he came up with that, and he will have, you know, taken down some serious money for doing that. Be honest, because it would have been played hundreds of thousands of times, and he would have got a cut each time. So, as I said, as a songwriter, if you can get away with your best song coming out with two words, then you've done really well. Anyway, welcome to everybody for this, our standard Saturday evening show. And we are talking about bats and whether they be ones that are in the Batman or whether they be real bats or whether they be tennis bats or cricket bats or baseball bats or whatever they might be. And I thought I should talk a little bit about bats because they helps, they do a number of things. Bats real in real life, that is, and that is that they help sustain caves because of what they do. Of course, their flying in the dark has led to us sort of working out how to use things like sonar and that sort of stuff. And they help plants multiply because they go and spread the seeds of plants. And then finally and most importantly, they eat a whole heap of insect pests. And so they sort of keep all the pest numbers down. So they're quite a funky things, bats, apart from the fact that they're loud and noisy.
Oh. Funky things.
That's my piece on.
Yeah.
Ah,
we need bats.
My piece on bats. We need bats.
Absolutely.
We do. That's exactly right. We need bats. And if bats weren't around, we'd have problems with insects. And you know, the last thing we want to be doing is getting back to another show like Fly Spray, Adam, which is where you end up.
I got a bat story.
That is cool.
Real quick.
That is cool. Yeah, I was a bat story.
Yeah, when like boys were young. We went camping, and at dusk, the bats would come out. You could see them flying just
yes.
after the sun went down before it got dark. And when I was a kid, you always throw a rock up in the air, and they would dive at it, right?
Yes.
So I'm showing my kids. There's some other children around, too, down by where a couple of boats are up on the beach. And I throw these rocks up, and I go, watch this. They're diving at it. I throw another rock, and it hits a bat. It hit at one, and he goes like a kamikaze, hits the water, and then starts screaming.
Wow.
starts screaming, and it's about 30, 40 feet off the shore.
Yep.
And then I've got this little girl, these little boys and everything, including my kids, going, you know, he's going to drown. So I've got to strip down. I have to strip down, take my boots off, strip down,
yep.
go out. And I took a jug out of one of the boats. They used to bail water, I guess. And I took it out with me
yep.
and scooped up this bat. And by that yep. time, some adults had come to see what the commotion was, and they're saying, "Oh, dirty bat, let it. You know, why are you saving it? Why are you saving it?" Well, hell, I had to save it because it was in front of a bunch
yeah,
of little nice. Kids,
exactly.
And I didn't know a bat could scream. I didn't know a bat could scream.
Okay.
So
well, there you go. And so was that? Did you take the bat so it could be?
The water was ice cold, man.
Oh, there you go.
I couldn't let it die.
There you go. Well, no, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's good that you were showing, you know, charity towards bats that you accidentally took out of the sky, Hannah, you know. So, things happen.
Right out of the down, it dove for it. It must have had his sonar wasn't working very well that day.
Yeah. Well, it can happen. You know, we've all had off days with our sonar, Hannah, you know.
Bad bat.
No, I'm just saying. We've had all that off day. Our Deb, do you have any bat stories to share with us?
Other than the fact that there's two that fly around the backyard at the edge of the creek at night, not really, because they
yes.
don't mess with me, and I just watch them in admiration and
yes.
I mean, they're really, really cool. And they look just like a bird at first. And they do a great job.
Yes.
And I call them, you touched on it already with the bugs and stuff. And I had just wrote a piece about ladybugs, but bats are as well. Mother Earth's flying exterminators because they do a bang up job of keeping the gnats down here and stuff like that. So I appreciate them, but that's my encounter is respectfully looking.
Well, there you go. I know. I like respectfully looking. I think that's kind of fun. And Hatter, I was looking. If you look at the board, I was looking to see if Australia had any coins on bats. Yeah. So we've got flying possums from different things, but we don't have bats. But we do at the minute, and I put it up on the board, have a really cool $2 coin about honeybees. I know you were talking about honeybees not long ago.
You don't have bats in Oz?
We do have bats in Oz, but I haven't made it onto the coins. That's the problem. So that's what I was looking for, with bats on Australian coins. Yeah, because I thought, well, somebody's going to have done it, you know. But
that's one of Australia's coins?
That is the current $2. That is the current $2 coin. Yes.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It is.
I want one. But you'll have to bring one back from Oz.
Okay.
That's now, $2 actually, and after all of that, there has been no. There has been no regular Australian coin that that has had bats on it. There has been none. But now, after all that, I have found one, which is a special limited release coin. We might have to get you one of these when you come over.
Absolutely.
Because this is from the Perth Mint, and the Perth Mint do special coins. Yeah. So we'll I'll just show you this in one tick once the once my browser recovers. But that this is these are ghost bats, so really small bats, and this is what the coin looks like normally. So if you go and have a look at the board again, it's sort of like copper, and you can sort of see some specks.
It's like a black oval.
When you put
it's like
it
a black oval.
Yeah, like that's what it's meant to be. But if you look, at it in the dark, it sort of glitters because this is a expensive coin, not everyday coin. This is one you pay a couple of $100s for. Yeah, you go and you pay your money as a limited edition coin, and the Perth Mint do a number of these, and has when you put it in the dark, that bit that's in the black there, it has like an opal finish to it, and you can see.
Wow.
So
holy cow!
Wow!
How's that?
Look at them. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
It's like a
Is that orange one translucent? Is that orange one translucent?
A little bit. I mean, it looks to be. Yeah, I just picked these up from having a quick look, you know, you can see it normally in the normal light, it's just quite dark. But if you put it in the sort of special light, it comes out and it's quite something.
It kind of looks like a stained glass window as well.
There.
It does look like a glass window. Yeah. So,
and who knew?
I
just Googled real quick out of curiosity, and the USA has a quarter from 2020 with a bat on the back. I did not know this, but it's on the board as well. It's actually a national park coin. Very cool.
That is very sweet. I like that a lot.
Nicole?
What year was that?
It is cool.
2020, and it's the newest national park quarter, and it's inspired for fruit bats specifically.
There you go.
Huh.
Well, I'm impressed. We've got a number of different bat coins, and
who knew?
And they look kind of cute.
And they're—I mean, it's really cute. It looks like a mama and child on the tail side of.
It's a really cute coin. It really is. So, anyway, there you go. We can't. We've done the bats and coins now. That's pretty cool. Hatter, we actually do poetry though occasionally, and I think that you have a poem for this week.
Oh, I do. Let me go get it. I didn't post it on the
team. Okay,
my bad. Let me go get it.
No, it's all good. I haven't posted mine in the group either, but I've got one too.
Alrighty then. Where's my... There's...
But who knew? We've got, you know, nice background. People would have known that. We went down a very specific path of bat-related things there.
You know, when that show was going on, it became so popular, the big stars were fighting over to be villains. I mean, you had Vincent Price, Roddy McDowell, Shelley Winters, Cesar Romero, Frank Gorshin.
Yes.
Burgess Meredith, on and on and on.
Oh, no, there was a huge list because it was super cool. And I loved all the sort of pow and whap and bang and the stuff that came up on the screen when they were fighting, if you remember. Yeah?
Okay, so, there's mine.
Okay, and I should say, for all of those people who are interested, the study of currency and coins is called numismatics. It's a word I was looking for. Mm. Numismatics. It's not a word you hear every day. So, Hannah, we've got your poem up.
Yeah. I sort of went another angle. Sort of went the other angle with a bat. It's called, they called him Ruth.
Yep.
It goes like this. The club said slugger at the end of the length, heavy at one end, made me think that it was used to swing by the boys of summer, signed by fire and a piece of lumber. Looking past the stadium lights, when brought one day to a gunfight, hair was left for the swing of a, from a swing to the head, stained in red, from the one left dead. We're looking for the man whose name was signed by fire again at some earlier time. Someone that is able and willing to kill. We know for sure he comes from Louisville, wrapped in paper and signed by name. A man they say is in the Hall of Fame. We won't stop until he's caught. The man from Kentucky is what we've got. We've been to his house and he wasn't home. We tried to call, but there's no phone. He has no phone. He works for professional teams. We found it, and that he died. They say he died, but he's still around. We've got tickets for a home team booth. I'm sure we'll find the man called Ruth, just because he's the Babe Ruth Louisville Slugger, right?
Yeah. That's cool, Hatter. I like that you went with the bat for the connection to the bat with sport. I think that's really cool.
It's a very specific one.
Yeah. Look, a very specific but very very famous too. Sports person in the, because he was called the Louisville Slugger, wasn't he? Babe Ruth, yeah.
No, he was the Sultan of Swing. Louisville Slugger was more like a Lou Gehrig, I believe. Cobb.
Well, there you go.
But a Louisville Slugger is a type of bat, and there's been many professional, very good players like Cal Ripken Jr., Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle. Roger Maris, a bunch of people have signed their own Louisville Slugger bat. But that happened in my poem, they just happened to have the one with Babe Ruth's name on it.
Got it. And, you know, once you've got a signed bat like that, you've really got something. So, what did you think of Hatter going down the baseball path?
The poem is awesome, and for a minute when you started reading, I thought, uh-oh, because I I didn't look and see that you wrote this. You'll see why I said uh-oh in a minute. But anyway, I love how you pulled in the history, but you put it in rhyme, and it's a hell of a tribute to Babe Ruth. And it's just, it gave me one of those great minds think alike kind of flashes, because I couldn't finish my poem because things kept happening in the background this afternoon. But something popped into my mind, and I thought, I'll bring this and read it for the guys. And then you read the poem that you wrote, which you had no way of knowing is actually a segue into what I brought with me. So that struck me too. So it's just like each week, one way or another, we prove that we kind of click for a reason and are in sync and get along so well, because, like, you know, it just seems to go down that way. But it's an awesome poem. Great tribute.
It is awesome. Yeah, it is. It's a historical poem, but it's a sort of poem that has presence, and I love poems that talk about things that we should remember that we don't, you know, and because oftentimes history gets brought to life by poetry, and I think this is a great example of that.
Yeah, and it's also really nice to see his muse kick in a little. Woo-hoo.
So yeah, now, of course, up on the board, Hatter. You think about baseball bats and sluggers and stuff, and then I have to put up my cricket bat because you know, that's what I think about when I do bats. And worth noting that it's got the pink handle on it, and that pink handle is meaningful. The pink handle is actually was a fundraising thing for cancer here in Australia.
Sure.
And so that was McGrath Foundation sold those bat handles, and you paid your money and you got your special pen, and that was for cancer awareness. But the rest of that bat, that's actually, you know, how much do baseball bats go for, Hatter?
Depends on which kind and what size, where you get it from. And if you want a professional one for that, you can get a customized, personalized Louisville Slugger. If you just pay the money, they'll send you a bat with your name on it. So it's not.
And it's not as expensive as you would think.
But an original bat from Louisville, shoot, I was there looking at them, and I didn't even look at the price. Let me research that real quick.
Well, because they're antiques, okay. That add up. They're not sort of, you know, usable bats. They're antiques. People buy them because of their place and their history. But that bat in front of you there is about a $500 Australian bat. So that's what, about $350 American. And everyday use bats go up to about twice that. They go up to about $700 US.
Yeah, if you go after a customized, a Babe Ruth bat now, you're going to pay thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
You can pay anywhere from $600 to $700 to, you know, $400 to $500 for more recent players.
Yep. And the same here. If you go after an icon of the game, and you go after their, and you want to buy, you know, their cricket bat, it'll set you back, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It says you can.
Oh,
get
yeah.
A,
okay. There's definitely like limited
you can
series.
Get a Major League Baseball bat for me worth $75 to $185.
Yeah, and just a regular Louisville Slugger bat is about 35.
Yeah, no, so the cricket bats are more expensive, aren't they, than that at the end of the day? Because, as I'm saying, mine was about $350 US, and it was just a regular everyday bat. Yeah.
Yeah, Louisville Slugger is just like a brand name, like Marucci, Victus, Old Hickory, and Rawlings, different other bats that you can buy, like mitts, like gloves.
Yes.
Depending on how much you want to spend.
Yes, yes. So, you know, it's and I'm just looking up as we talk. The most expensive baseball bat was the first baseball bat, which sold for $1.265 million at an auction in 2004.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah?
No doubt. Yeah, and if you want to buy a bat that was used in a game by a certain player type of thing,
yep,
you spend $150
yep
and up. Yeah.
Yeah, and you probably have to bid on it.
Yeah,
well, that's right. That's right. So the most expensive bat, cricket bat, was ever sold was the best Australian cricketer ever was Don Bradman. He was alive in the 1930s, and his bat that he used in the 1934 series sold for $250,000.
Hmm.
So
oh,
not
wow
quite the yeah not quite the bat of the first baseball bat, but not far off it. So
yeah,
there you go.
Well, the most expensive baseball bat over here went for a whopping $1.1 million in a private sale because it belonged to Ty Cobb.
Ty Cobb.
Well,
yeah, and I'm sure ones for like from Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, and these guys, Roger Maris, probably cost you a good
yep
penny too.
Oh no, I think so. So now, Deb, did you want to put your palm on the board next? Because I think there was a connection you were signing, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, let's do that. Let me click this on the board. Okay. So as I said, I couldn't finish mine, so I went and dug something up. It's by Ernest Lawrence
yep
Thayer, born in Lawrence, Massachusetts,
yes,
and he graduated magna cum laude from Harvard in philosophy in 1885 after editing
cool
the Harvard Lampoon. And as far as I know, it would be pretty hard-pressed to find someone who has never heard of this poem. So click on there, and I'll read.
Yeah.
And this
cool
is, for educational purposes, Ernest Lawrence Thayer, Casey at the Bat.
Now you got to do this justice.
The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2. With but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a pall-like silence fell like patrons on the game. A straggling few got up to go deep in despair. The rest clung to the hope which springs eternal in the human beast. They thought if only Casey could get even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a hoodoo while the latter was a cake. So upon the stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single, to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then, from 5,000 throats and more, there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley. It rattled in the dell. It pounded on the mountain and recoiled upon the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner, and he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing, and a smile lit Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly dotted his hat, no stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded with the whip them in his shirt. Then, while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip,
Defiance flashed in Casey's eyes. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching in a naughty grandeur there. Closed by sturdy batsmen, a ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on the stern of distant shore. "Kill him, kill the umpire," shouted one on the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising turmoil. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more he done spear flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two." "Fraud," cried the mad thousands, and echo answered, "Fraud." But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They sat his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again. The sneer had fled from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing and little children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Great Casey had struck out. End poem.
That's lovely, Kev. I really like that. It's a little piece of history, isn't it? And it's a little sort of acknowledgement of baseball and the impact it had on the community and it has had forever. Hatter, what did you think?
I think she read it great. There's an animated cartoon that basically goes to this poem. I think you can find it on YouTube. I'm sure you can. And it's a narrative and with the actors and the visiting team and the pitcher and Casey all doing their thing.
It's a beautiful
thing. I'm pretty
sure
I've seen it. It's black and white, isn't it?
No, it's color.
Deb, I
don't know, but it's
poem.
A fun one to read. I flubbed it a couple times, but
it's a beautiful poem. But I have to respond to the Australian version of that poem. Yeah, and the Australian of that poem is by a writer called Thomas Edward Spencer. It's from 1901. It's probably actually heard that poem and then started writing this. Thomas Edward Spencer was born in London, but he came to Australia, as all good people do, and he was a building contractor. Yeah, so he and then an arbitration specialist in industrial disputes. But he went and did the University of Sydney Physics Laboratory, the sewerage system in Sydney, worked on Goulburn Jail, and then, of course, like the best of business people, he was a writer as well. And so, let me go and put this up on the board as a response to that. This is how McDougall topped the score. It goes a little bit like this. A peaceful spot is Piper's Flat for folk that live around. They keep themselves by keeping ship and cheap and turning up the ground. But the climate is erratic and the consequences or the struggle with the elements is everlasting war. We plough and sow and harrow, then all sit down and pray for rain. And then we all get flooded out and have to start again. But the folk are now rejoicing as they ne'er reduced before. For we've played Molongo cricket and McDougall topped the score. Molongo had a head on it and challenged us to play a single innings match for lunch, a losing team to pay. We were not great guns at cricket, but we couldn't well say no. So we went down to practice and let the reaping go. We scoured the flat for 10 miles round to muster up our men, but when the list was totaled, we could only number 10. and up spoke big Tom Brady. He was always slow to speak, and he said, "What Price McDougall lives down at Cooper's Creek." So we sent for old McDougall, and he stated in reply that he'd never played cricket, but he'd half a mind to try. He couldn't come to practice because he was getting in his hay, but he guessed he'd show the beggars from Molongo how to play it. Now, McDougall was a Scotchman, and a canny one at that. So he started into practice with a paling for a bat. He got Mrs. Mac to bowl to him, but she couldn't run at all. So he trained his sheepdog Pincher how to scout and fetch the bull. Now, Pincher was no puppy. He was old and worn and grey, but he understood McDougall and accustomed to obey. When McDougall cried out, "Fetch it," he would fetch it in a trice, but until the word was "drop it," he would grip it like a vice. And each succeeding night they played until the light grew dim. Sometimes McDougall struck the ball, sometimes the ball struck him. Each time he struck the ball would plough a furrow in the ground, and when he missed, the impetus would turn him three times round. The day at length arrived, the day that was to see Molongo bite the dust or Piper's flat knocked up the tree. Molongo's captain won the toss and sent his men to bat, and they gave some leather hunting to the men of Piper's Flat. When the ball sped where McDougall stood firm planted in his track, he shut his eyes and turned him round and stopped it with his back. The highest score was 22, the total 66. And Brady sent a Yorker down that scattered Johnson's sticks. Then Piper's for glory and renown, but like the grass before the sire, their wickets tumbled down. 9 wickets down for 17, with 50 more to win. Our captain heaved a sigh and sent McDougall in. £10 to 1, you'll lose it, cried a barracker from town, but McDougall said, "I'll take it, Mon," and plank the money down. Then he girded up his moleskins in a self-reliant style, threw off his hat and boots, and faced the bowler with a smile. He held the bat the wrong side out, and Johnson, with a grin, stepped lightly to the bowling crease and set a wobbler in. McDougall spooned it softly back, and Johnson waited there, but McDougall, crying, "Fetch it," started running like a hare. Molongo shouted, "Victory, he's out as sure as eggs," when Pincher started through the crowd and ran through Johnson's legs. He seized the ball like lightning, then he ran behind a log, and McDougall kept on running while Molongo chased the dog. They chased him up, they chased him down, they chased him round, and then he darted round the slip rail as the scorer shouted 10. McDougall puffed, Molongo swore, excitement was intense as the scorer marked down 20, Pincher cleared a barbed wire fence. "Let us head him," shrieked Molongo. "Grind a mundrel with a bat. Run it out, good old McDougall," yelled the mountain of Piper's Flat. And McDougall kept on jogging, and then Pincher doubled back, and the scorer counted 40 as they raced across the track. McDougall's legs were going fast. Molongo's breath was gone, but still Molongo chased the dog. McDougall struggled on. When the scorer had scouted, then they knew the chase could cease, and McDougall gasped out, "Drop it," as he dropped within his crease. Then Pincher dropped the ball, and as instinctively he knew, discretion was the wiser plan, he disappeared from view, and as Molongo's beaten men exhausted lay around, we raised McDougall shoulder high and bore him from the ground. We bore him to McGuinness's, where lunch was ready laid and filled up with whiskey punch, for which Molongo paid. We drank his health in bumpers, and we cheered him 3 times 3, and when Molongo got its breath, Molongo joined the spree, and the critics say they never saw a cricket match like that. When McDougall broke the record in the game at Piper's Flat, and the folk are jubilating as they never did before, for we played Molongo cricket, and McDougall topped the score. End poem.
Way cool.
Yeah. Yeah, some terms I'm not familiar with. What's the 50? 40, what they were yelling?
Oh, that was how much runs they were making, Hatter. So effectively, because the dog still had the ball and they hadn't got it back, they kept on running. It was as if they kept on running around the diamond in baseball and scoring more and more runs. So you can only score one run in baseball, but you can score as many as you like in cricket if you can't get the ball back.
Wow.
Oh, is that right?
Wow. Yeah.
No.
And so basically what happened, the whole story is about McDougall. He's got his dog, and so he just spoons the ball up, calls the dog in. The dog grabs the ball and starts running away from everybody, and they score 50 runs and win the match.
Are there terms or phrases that are used to this that relate to that kind of a dog taking the ball?
Yeah. It's a beautiful poem, a very famous poem. Just a really cute old. It was originally published in the Bulletin Reciter in 1901, So as I said, it's about the same.
Oh, okay.
You know, vintage.
Because
yeah,
I think the 20. I think it was in 21 or 27. Was Casey that was written, and in 1954
yeah, right.
was the cartoon. 1954 was the cartoon by by Disney, and that means
right.
that every frame of that thing was hand painted by hand.
Yes, that's right. It would have been at that age too. Absolutely,
yeah.
Like all the cartoons of that age. Absolutely. So anyway, Deb, I really enjoyed your piece. So I thought, why not bring in a little bit of Thomas Spencer, which I don't
yeah,
think,
no,
we've,
I thought
they I don't
all,
think I've done that before.
No, and I think they all tied in quite nicely.
And the
playfulness in the one you shared was really fun.
I thought it was. Hannah, I'm going to get you to think about what our topic should be next week, and I'm going to play Gonzo now, Deb, I think, because we had part one,
do,
I think it was.
I think Stevens might be on topic if we do the last bat one, and then we could do we could close with Gonzo instead of middle this time.
Well, that's okay. Well, why don't we do Stevens' one then? Have we got that in the studio as well?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
To be right at the top.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Well, I'm going to put Stevens' palm on the board, and we've got mine as well, which doesn't fit, sort of fit anywhere, so we might do it next and then finish with Gonzo.
Perfect.
So let us put Stephen now. Stephen's down the board, and I'm now going to play his poem. Here we go.
Why Do We Even Try? By Stephen 76. You've heard of it, man. We don't stand a chance. It's watching us all the time. To break into here gives me a fear. Why'd I choose a life of crime? That thing, it will come. Do not think me dumb. Pointed ears and its fangs that bite. Go home now, we should, because it'll drink our blood until we are deathly white. It blends with the night and will give us a fright when it comes down on our heads. We'll see its face as our hearts start to race and its eyes glow demonly red. So why do we try when we know we will die? Crime is not where it's at. To keep doing this does make us dim wits as we deal with this giant bat. And boom.
There we go. Perfectly on topic. You're right, Deb. You're right. Yeah. It's man and a beautiful image there. So well done, Stephen. Love the piece. Deb, what did you think of Stephen's piece written for the Batman movie, actually? 1989
yeah.
Batman movie.
I thought it was really cool. And like the second stanza, that thing, it will come. Do not drink me dumb, pointed ears and fangs that bite. Go home now, we should, because I'll drink our blood until we are deathly white. It's like you look at that photo and then you read his words and it's like, yeah, because I'll drink our blood. So I think he did a really good job of pulling this demon to life. And at the end there, mm-hmm. to keep doing this, does it make us dimwits? I don't know what to talk tonight. As we deal with the giant bat. It's just like, and in my mind I heard, I'm Batman. I think it's really cool. And he got a medal for it too. Congrats on that. Great share, Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen, that was really cool. Hannah, what did you think of Stephen and his quite amazing bat there?
I'm Batman. Like that.
See?
Yeah.
There you go.
The picture more now. Batman was supposed to be he wasn't a good guy. He wasn't a law abiding type of crime fighter that if you look at the original Batman in the cartoons with comic books, you'll see that he was a fugitive of justice. He was always being framed, like, for stuff he didn't do.
Yes.
But his Way of Justice is sort of like between Dexter and what's the movie? I'm Venom.
The Punisher.
I'm Venom. Venom. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Venom.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, Steven. Yep. I love rhyme. It's tight. It works. Good job.
I agree. Absolutely. It happened to have that sitting in the catalogue, and I think that's a terrific, terrific match for the show. So thank you, Stephen, for giving us the SoundCloud and for contributing to the show as always. It is appreciated.
And on a side note, I just wanted to mention that on Monday at 7:30 p.m., Poetic Slice of Life is doing one of the most profitable horror movies for their prompt. It's the movie The Exorcist, the original with Linda Blair, and they have some amazing quotes to choose from. Again, that's 7:30 on Monday at A Poetic Slice of Life with Stephen and Kay.
The most frightening
movie ever. Oh, just horrible. Now, Hatter, you are thinking of a topic, yes? I'm going to do my poem, and I'm going to ask you for your thoughts, yes?
Well, we're going to be writing about clocks. Clocks, tick-tock.
We can do clocks. Okay, so clocks it is for next week. We're on clocks. I've actually worked out what mine's going to be for the week after now, too, Hatter. How's that? So I can tell you that if you
want.
No. Well, the word came up, and I thought, oh, no, I've got to do that. So we're doing clocks next week, yeah? And for those people who were so inspired, we're doing Venom the week after. Venom. Yeah? Love the word Venom. Always have. So clocks next week, Venom the week after, Deb. There you go. We've got two weeks in advance. How's that? We never have that. So, anyway, there you go. Okay, this is my poem. Don't make any sense of this.
Yep.
It's called About Bats. It's called About Bats. And it goes a little bit like this.
Hold on.
From a cave, a screaming... Oh, hold on. You got it, Hatter, or not? Sorry.
No, not yet.
Apologies.
And...
Stop. Okay, we'll wait till it comes up.
I still got...
We'll wait till it comes up.
Let me refresh.
Yeah, no.
And there you go. Okay, got
special
it.
Special type of monorhyme. Anyway, try this. This is about bats, and it goes a bit like this. Bats are from a cave, a screaming once gather, forgotten surfaces lumber as remnants of humanity lather. Protection by number, then in caves gather, on blood of men many crawl, like suds in water when lather. Same when there are balls, to lines of shark-raving tents, balls they kill in the lather. People, sharks whence, on blood screaming gather. Cavemen, a kill they crave. Humanity left forgotten in lather. End poem.
People, sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
The vampire bat gives them all a bad name.
The vampire bat goes for the blood, absolutely. Yes.
I like a new road or a secret gate, and through we pass them by today. Tomorrow we may come this way and take the hidden paths that run towards the moon or to the sun. The wrong one. I'm trying. I'm on the wrong one. Where did it just go? Okay. I don't know what just happened. Protection by number. Then caves gather. Did you know that number is considered a cauldron? I learned that when I was trying to write my poem.
And in the
third stanza, same when there are balls to lines as sharks, we gather bats craving tense balls, they kill in the lather. And all kinds of things pop into your mind, you know, kill in the lather, that lather of rage and anger and just meanness.
Yes. So
there's some really cool lines in here, and I like the way you ended it with a switch back to that forgotten in the lather. So, you know, it's we kill in the lather, and then it's left
forgotten there. The ending line is like driving it.
Okay, now you are we playing this freaking? I mean, you kept lather gather through the whole thing, right?
I did. Yes.
Is there a name for that?
No, it's just something I made up as I went along, Hatter. So, no, there's no name to it. I just thought, I'm going to keep with the same rhyming pair and write around it, number one. And number two, I'm going to do a final stanza with words that I have put in the first three stanzas. So you'll notice and blood and screaming. Cave is separate from men, but still there. A kill, humanity, forgotten, have all come from the first three stanzas and have been reused in the final stanza.
Nah, Hatter, yeah. He's not showing off.
Nah, a little bit. We call it an AP Taylor or Oz. What do we call this style? You got to.
I don't know.
That's
what I did. Yeah, so I just kept the same writing words, worked around it with different things, and then to make a point, I think, in the last stanza not very pleasant when blood's in the water.
Well, Deborah, what are we going to call this style of writing? Because it's brilliant.
We call this another AP invention he's showing off a bit. And I think it's really cool, the pattern he created, and that you should do it again, or because it works. There's something about, even though you switched it around, there's something about bringing it all back in that last stanza that adds to it as well. So like I was going to say, whatever is in the water in Oz, continue drinking. Because, like, you've been belting out poems and new forms and new styles, and you're on a roll.
Sort of like poems that go, you could read backwards at the same, you know, kind of thing.
You could possibly, although because this one doesn't go, it's not fully rhymed.
Oh, no. I'm saying it's just the creativity and the complexity. It's just like that other kind that I love so much.
I just there's been a few things going on the site recently, Hatter, where people have been sort of, you know, getting sort of ganged up on, for want of a better word, and I just sort of was reflecting upon that. So,
well, you know, I'm serious. I don't know what you got to do to copyright a style of poetry, but you should put your name on this somehow.
Yep.
You should name it.
Future
poetry classes. Future poetry classes. We'll be talking about A.P. Taylor, you know, 50 years from now. There's a guy called the Wizard of Oz.
I guess.
You got it. That way Deborah and I can say we knew him. We knew him.
We knew him when, right? I was just thinking that too.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes. Well, maybe the form should be, the ghost bat, Hatter, because it started off about bat.
Would they name haiku or nursery rhyme or whatever?
That's true. So it was a strange sort of thought, but it seemed to work out okay, and that's all you can ask, really.
It worked out great.
It was a strange sort of thought, but it sort of worked out okay. Now, so we have come, Hatter, to almost the end of the show, but of course we can't do the end of the show without talking about the poem that we've got on the board, which is following on from the poem that we had from last week, and by We Are All Gonzo. And I really enjoyed his poem last week and the production of his poem last week. And so we're going to put that up on the board. And once we've heard that, we're probably going to pack up and take our bats and go home. So here is the piece by Gonzo, and here we go now.
Stupid lock. Always sticks. There we go.
Sure, I'm just in the back. We aren't open for another 30 minutes. You can wait if you want. The ovens aren't even warm.
Sleepy locked eyes with an enemy she despised. Red accurately knocked a tray of half-filled parfait off the counter into the way of the furious Sleepy as Red ran. A quick flick of Sleepy's wrist, a rip, turned the cloak a whip, and gripped Red's lower ankle at a sharp angle, causing her legs to entangle and trip, sending her careening towards the table.
Listen, we can't do this here.
Sleepy did not heed Red's sudden plea as a peachy key to the knee and a soccer kick to the spleen sent Red crashing away through a dirty bagel display.
Enough!
Red shouted with a sick grin as she grabbed a pair of rolling pins and began spiling both between her hands, swiftly swinging nearer to Sleepy's glance. Expert precision as Sleepy reached for her blade from the sheath hidden where the sword had laid, but never fully revealing the blade as Red attempted to evade Sleepy's glaring gaze. Sliding the casing down never more than an inch or two, Red's frustration grew and grew.
You were never this good. It doesn't matter. I'm better.
As the two entangled, strangled in the drama of the moment.
I hate you.
I hate you too. I hate you times a thousand.
I hate you times a million. I hate you times a million. Infinity.
Anything times infinity is infinity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Grandma stepped off the bus, and no one noticed him.
What happened here?
Quickly, they hid their weapons from sight and stood nonchalantly, smiling, polite.
My big goods? The displays are destroyed? For the love of God, no one watered my azaleas.
You know what, Nana? You remember that huntsman?
Mm-hmm.
The one with the axe?
Yes.
He came here hungry this morning. And when I told him we weren't open,
mm-hmm.
he started acting like a big fool. He threw a tantrum and left.
Well, we should call the sheriff.
I already did. Go in the back and get some tea. Try and relax while I clean this mess up.
The pair stood awkwardly in a stare of doom as Grandma slowly worked her way out of the room, silent, standing, unsure of what to do.
Do you want a cup of coffee?
Sleepy stared.
I'm not going to poison, it's just decaf.
Sure.
You'll take a black like you used to?
Don't act all familiar. We got unfinished business and you know it.
Listen, I know we did you dirty. And I sure heck knows, but it ain't over. As long as that little old lady is in that room, you have no trouble from me.
Sleepy nods and sits down.
I'll ask you again. How do you like your coffee?
As the coffee pot shatters beside Sleepy's head, Red slipped the Glock from inside a loaf of bread. Stopped dead in her tracks by several clicks and a few more clacks of cleaving glass and cups sliding off their rack. The silent blade slipped through the counter, looking for Red. Oh, and they've found her. Red dropped to the floor with a whine while Sleepy wiped the blade clean on the loaf Red supplied. Someone in the corner? Perhaps danger.
What have you done to my beautiful granddaughter?
I know you may not want to hear it, but that brat deserved it. One day you might want to come find me to finish this. On that day, I'll be waiting.
I swear, day and night, I will train my body to become the ultimate killing machine to exact horrific and painful vengeance upon you when you least expect it. Lay awake. Be afraid to blink, for my wrath will be swift and...
Before Granny's revenge would even begin to start, the excitement was too much for her little old heart. Sleepy eyed the establishment and sparked a near candle. vengeance on the mind of the vivacious, vicious vandal. A spark ignited grease as the east burst into flames. Sleepy darted under the door's arch and continued on her way, never turning back to gaze at the infernal blaze. A far greater fire burned in her heart, her mission not finished that day. Although a smile crept from beneath the depths where it had once been hidden for quite some time, and a tear quite queer ran down her cheek as a memory flashed in her mind.
Prince Charming, you take to be your lawfully wedded wife.
I do.
And you take Prince Charming as your lawfully wedded husband.
I'm sorry. Is this a bad time?
Way to leave us hanging, man.
Yeah. Spaghetti Western's got nothing on that, man.
No, right? He's. I mean, this is priceless. It's just too cool.
You know, that's what I said. That's what I said. The next stage of poetry reading is going to be theatrical performances, performance art. There it is.
Yeah, well,
right,
he sure is laying the groundwork for us, because, like, these are stellar. And, hey, guys, I can't wrap up with these. I got to get out the door to get to him in time.
It
was
fun with
both of you, and I'll talk to you soon. Love and respect.
Thanks again. See you soon. Now, did you notice, Hannah, did you notice that the greatest ever piece of panpipe music was in that at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, Zamfir.
The Lonely Shepherd. The Lonely Shepherd by Georgie Zamfir.
It sounded like Hugo Montenegro that does the spaghetti Western themes, you know, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
No, that is the piece of panpipe music, Hatter. The piece of panpipe music. There is no bigger piece of panpipe music than Georgie Zamfir, The Lonely Shepherd.
Yeah, Zamfir.
Yeah. From 1977. Georgie Zamfir and the Lonely Shepherd. Yeah. It was huge in 1977. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, no.
Yeah.
And
try to comment.
I'm about to show you a set of panpipes. There really isn't a lot to panpipes. Yeah, they're just a few strands of bamboo that are tied together with, you know, bits of string. Yeah, and there really is not a lot to panpipes. Right. So let me show you an image library. Bear with me. So if you go to the board now, you'll see panpipes.
Yeah, I'm not.
That is not not a complex instrument, right?
Yeah.
That is a set of panpipes. Yeah. And Georgie Zamfir was amazing on the panpipes.
I mean, you got to have. I remember the commercials with Zamfir, master of the panpipe. Pan flute. There's got to be a way to hit the upper register notes. You know, you tighten your lips.
Yeah. Oh, it's all about lips. And I'm just seeing if will this play it while I've got everything else going. Well, will it crash my whole system? That's the question. No, it's going to go to an ad. That's not going to be any use at all. But just amazing stuff. Anyway, we'll have to have the pan pipes at some point, Hatter. But meantime, next week, we have the Wonderful World of Clocks, and the week after, we have Venom. So there you go. We've got 2 weeks in advance. 2 weeks in advance, if we know what we're doing. So Clocks for next week, Venom the week after, and we'll just roll with those, I think, Adder. And, of course, we'll have something back from Gonzo with thanks to Deb for hanging around with us. Thanks to Stephen for putting a poem in. And thanks to Deb for finding that wonderful baseball poem, which I thought was brilliant. And, and of course, we had a little bit of Spencer as well from Oz, Hatter. So we had it all this week.
We did.
So.
Great show.
We've got to work out what we're going to finish with, Hatter. I'm just going through and looking at what we're going to do and what our final song is going to be. And I as you know, I'm very, very fond of a variety of strange, weird and wonderful bands, and even some of those from the mid-time. I'm going to go out with a bit of Smashing Pumpkins, Hatter. And we're going to go out with Disarm from Smashing Pumpkins. So thank you, and we will catch you next week for our clocks.
Yeah, excellent show, AP.
Thanks, Hatter. Been fun. And here we go with Disarm by Smashing Pumpkins. Really like that song. That's it for us for today. Thanks, Hatter. Thanks, Deb. And we'll be back next week for Clocks. Bye, everybody. Talk soon. Thanks, Hatter.
Thanks, Anthony.